All right, we're recording.
Okay.
Welcome to Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 11, Top 5 Indie Books. I am Chris Mosby.
I'm Caleb Gerard.
And I'm Murray Fox.
Tonight we will be talking about our five favorite indie books, as in collections, graphic novels, whatnot. Continuing from the last two episodes, this is a lot broader category. It's kind of tough for me. I don't know about you guys.
I actually found it pretty easy, unless, of course, one of you bastards pulls one of my books out.
Well, that's very possible. We shall see.
Oh, yeah, I only found it tough to narrow it down. I had like 12 or 13 I could have.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have as many indie stuff as probably you guys do, but I've been building that up slowly, so.
I think my biggest problem is that the stuff that borders on indie is, and I was just IMing you on this one, Chris, is I've got some ABC stuff, America's Best Comics, which is a imprint from Wildstorm, but they were all post-DC acquisitions, so
yeah.
Sticking with the hard rules, because after all, we are a stickler for the rules here.
Yeah. Well, especially since you made the rules. This
yeah, time. God.
Anyway.
Time for a reboot of the rules.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Sorry. I'm done.
Okay.
Bitching.
All right, then. Let's see. Anything we want to talk about before we get started?
Other than, you know, I just want to say, I mean, I know this is the indie episode,
mm-hmm.
but this second month of DC Books is really...
Oh, yeah.
Food has been tremendously good.
Oh, absolutely. Birds of Prey was better than the first one. I really enjoyed that DC Universe Presents. What else was it I was surprised on that I got?
Batwoman number 2 was like... head and shoulders above number 1.
Really? I haven't read that one yet, but yeah.
Oh, it was good.
Yes, it was. It was beautiful, too.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
How about that 2-page spread with all the Batman Inc. characters? That was...
Yeah.
I read a little thing on Bleeding Cool about that, how they whited some of them out because, you know, they kind of like don't exist anymore or something like that.
Jesus.
But anyway.
I just wanted to bring that up. It's been...
Yeah.
It's been really... great. And I actually bought a couple of the digital ones and
mm-hmm.
still say they're really nice, but the biggest problem with those 2-page spreads on the computer screen, I don't have a tablet, so I have to turn my computer, but it doesn't I encourage 2-page spreads. They're beautiful on a printed page, but that's one thing the printed page is going to have over the digital at the moment.
Right. Yeah, I actually bought... Somehow, I did not order the Star Trek Legion thing. You okay there, Murray?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Just opening the window, sorry.
Okay. but, yeah, I didn't get... Somehow, I didn't order that. I got shuffled out, and I got it on Comicology instead. And I just have problems reading that digital still, so... I can't get into it as well, so we'll see how that goes.
Wish you luck.
Yeah. But anyway, okay. Anything you
Sorry.
Got? No, that's fine. Anything you got, Murray?
I haven't read enough of the month 2 stuff yet. I've been
mm-hmm.
I read the first 2 weeks, but I've been away from the comic shop, so I'm going through withdrawal here.
I know what you mean.
And I haven't cracked open the digital stuff at all. So if by the end of the week I'm still, you know, going through the tremors, I may have to. And then we'll see.
Yeah.
But the stuff I've read, I've really enjoyed.
I think, Murray, you're really going to, based on what I'm hearing the last few weeks, I think you're really going to like Wonder Woman number 2.
Really?
It looks good.
Well, fingers crossed.
Okay. All right, then. Let's get her started here. Let's see. Usually, Murray, you lead off first.
Alrighty. My number five pick is going to be fairly recent. It is the Archie Wedding Collection. Archie in Will You Marry Me? The Married Life series.
You just never cease to amaze me.
I love it. It is so cool. Written by Michael Uslan, maybe, and illustrated by Stan Goldberg.
Wow.
It collects how many? I don't even know how many issues it was.
It's either four or six, isn't it?
I've got the collection, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it is fun. I mean, I remember growing up reading Archie. They were always at the cottage, or they were always like beach reading. And this is just a cool little series. Archie gets to marry Veronica, and then he gets to marry Betty. And they used a little conceit. I don't ever remember reading this, but I guess he used to wander down memory lane to kind of visit the past or historical stuff or whatever. But this time he wanders up memory lane and sees what life would be like if he marries first Veronica and then Betty. And it's fun. And then it's got a whole series that spins out of it. It's like a magazine size.
I remember hearing about that. Actually,
I know. I've been following it. I've totally been following it. It comes out every second month it comes out. It's like $3.99, and you get two comics for $3.99, and they're double sized.
Wow!
The paper's kind of cheap, but I don't care. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, they got to cut something.
Yeah.
Hey, who cares if the paper's cheap? I mean,
that's one thing that they've been using as an excuse for driving prices up for a while. I don't think that it necessarily matters. So.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, it's big. It's magazine size. The cover is glossy. The paper isn't like newsprint. It's still good paper, but it's not like the regular comic paper. It's just a little thinner maybe or something. But either way, that magazine series is fun. But the collection it's cool. It just takes all the characters, pushes them forward 10, 15 years, and you get to see Archie as a grown up.
Wow.
It's fun.
Did Jughead end up starting a band or something like that?
I don't think so. He started in one version. I think he bought Pop's Chocolate Shop, and in another version, he opened up a big hamburger stand that became quite popular.
That sounds about right.
Million Moose having. Weird children going to high school. Oh, man. I was reading Archie's before I was reading superhero stuff. So I need to go out and get this.
Yeah,
I've read some,
but I don't think I ever read it that much. And I think if anything that I read that wasn't superhero, it'd be Richie Rich. I think.
Oh yeah, Richie Rich for sure. That was another. Well, that was an all year perennial. Archie was usually just the summer.
Yeah.
You know, total taking a sidestep here. When you're talking about the paper quality and then Archie and Richie Rich and such, on Facebook, Dan Didio posted this picture of all of these Blue Ribbon Digests that he, says he found in his closet. That's how I would always pick up my Archies and pick up my Richie Riches and stuff. The grocery store, those little 100-page, or maybe they weren't even 100-page with those digests. And they were cheap, and the paper was crap, but so what? I was, eight or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Murray's case, I was, eight times number, but, it's okay.
Yes.
They were great.
No, that's an interesting choice, but yeah. All right, Caleb, what do you got?
All right, I got something that's old and new as my number five. It's John Byrne's Complete Next Men.
Oh, good. I'm glad someone picked that because I just realized it wasn't on my list.
Well, this is the volume one. This is IDW reprint. The reason I call it old and new is because this is from the late 80s, the original printings back. Right. I think it was Dark Horse was the original publisher, I think.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And then IDW recently worked out a deal with John Byrne to reprint them in these huge omnibus size collections. What was this, $20? And I think this thing has got to be close to 200, maybe 400 pages long.
Wow.
It was a great ahead of its time series. John Byrne, doing the best John Byrne, bringing the superheroes into the real world kind of story. It was black and white, so don't hold that against it there, Chris. It's still beautiful to look at.
Some of it's okay, you know.
Oh, okay. Admittedly, you have to be a John Byrne fan. If you're not a fan of John Byrne art, this book is going to suck for you.
Yeah. Well, I like his art. I'm just not sure if I really care for him.
Okay. It's not for everyone. It's definitely not for everyone.
Yeah.
I know that he has started doing newer stories with the same characters.
Yeah, he is working on that.
I haven't checked out any of them. Mm-hmm. But this was something I picked up month in and month out when it was on the stand.
Yeah. I never did get into it. I don't know why.
Well, here's your opportunity. $20 for a big, huge book. I bet you can probably find it. I actually got this, you know.
I just pulled it up on Amazon. It's in stock and everything.
Yeah, I got this on a half price table.
Yeah.
So it was only $10. Mm-hmm. I might have bought it for $20. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if I would have. But this is, you know, it written, drawn, inked by John Byrne. I'm trying to say if he edited the thing as well. It wouldn't surprise me a bit. But this is another thing that IDW has picked up. Stuff that has a lot of nostalgia value for comic book readers of a certain age and never been reprinted or has gone out of, the licensing has reverted back to the owner. Mm-hmm. And someone wants to see it. I know they've done some stuff with other did they do the Peanuts collection, I think? I think that was IDW.
I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's a great niche market, and it also gives people an opportunity to say, hey, I like this new X-Men. Mm-hmm. Where did it come from? There you go.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I just read something about X-Men. Yeah. Apparently, he had something planned, and it's so similar to what happened in the latest finale in Doctor Who. Yeah, it's on Bleeding Cool today, that he's thinking about scrapping what he planned to do and doing something else.
Surprised he's not suing the Doctor Who people for reading his mind.
Well, you know, here, I'll send you a link.
I think it'll still come out. Like, I think he just finished the first series was 10 issues, I think. The first series of the new collection, anyway. Yeah. So he kind of ended that story, and then he had planned to jump into sort of do like an aftermath sequel story, and that's what I guess has to be retooled a little bit, but that's all right. That is all right.
And again, you have to, and old time comic book fans or even newer ones have to set aside their opinion of John Byrne, because this is one of those separating the art from the person situations.
Yeah, and I haven't read any of his stuff in a while, but I've always liked his work. It's just, I actually met him at a convention in '96, and my little comic fanboy heart was crushed by it. So,
sorry.
No, it's just, I just never seen anybody act like that, and I don't know. That was however many years ago that was. So, but he does have that reputation. So, but anyway,
that's my number five. Yeah. John Byrne, X-Men, Volume 1 from IDW.
Yeah, that looks
excellent.
Looks good.
Choice.
Those look good. All right. Well, mine is going to be, which is probably not going to be surprising anyone, but it's probably on a lot of people's list. But it's the first volume of Sin City by Frank Miller, which I think they put the subtitle on it, The Long Goodbye, I think is the name of it. But this trade that I have doesn't have that title on it. They named it later on to name this story, particular story. And this is the one with the Marv, first story, and the one I got hooked on. I just picked it up because I heard a lot about it, and I became just just became just totally, I don't know, that the whole, never read anything like it before and ended up getting all the rest of them. I'm a big fan of it, and I'm looking forward to the next movie when they finally get.
But, oh, I just realized that my copies are missing. I'm looking at my bookshelf here.
Oh, yeah? Well, I loaned out several to my friend Mike. I think he still got them, but I happen to have this one. And it was the one that got me hooked, so that's why I picked it.
Huh. I don't think I've ever read it.
Oh, my.
Oh, Murray, it is
not for kids, for sure.
Yeah, I don't. I know I've seen the movie.
If you've seen the movie, you've read. It is a very literal of it. The only difference is it's all, of course, if depending on which DVD you got, you can watch different stories, in their entirety or broken up like they did in the movie. Rodriguez wasn't it. He wanted it to be a literal translation. So, if you've seen that, you really haven't missed that much. It's black and white for one, which, you know, I've said, but it's originally black and white. So it doesn't bother me. But one thing I read about how he did it, instead of starting with white and then putting color on it, he did it the other way around. All these panels were all black, and then he would take away black to do the art.
Oh, that is tough. So, wow.
And that's one of the reasons why I like it so much. And each one is – a lot of them are supposed to happen on the same night. And you can see, like, the next one after this one, you'll see characters that interact with each other but from a different perspective. And it's great stuff.
And it's got that same art style that he used on that he really solidified when he did Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The Hulk. Every man is a Hulk in this thing. Mm-hmm. Every woman is a sexy goddess, except if they're meant to not be.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing wrong with that. I mean, this is it's a comic book. It's noir.
Yeah,
it's pure noir.
I really like that kind of stuff. So, I think this is what made me realize how much I like noir too when I read this. So, but yeah, it's really good. In fact, I've got a shirt of. I just turned to a page and I have a shirt with that on it. But anyway, yeah, I just love the book and I've let my dad read them all. And he really likes them and. That's one of the ones I usually give to people if they got that comics are for kids attitude, you know. So you can tell great stories in this kind of format if you really try, you know, hard enough.
Totally.
And I you're right. His sense of continuity between all the stories. I mean, he could probably do one today that would still fit, you know, into some 10-minute period. You know, because all the stories have this like one scene almost that they all kind of cross over in, kind of like in Pulp Fiction or something, where this one jumps here, that one jumps there. And if he were to do one today, I'm sure pull a moment from one of these Marv stories and just that's where those two stories touch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just love it. It's great stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And it probably would have been on my list if I had a copy on my shelf. Check with your buddy and see if he's got my copy.
Sure, I'll do that.
All righty.
Guess he's going to Amazon after this.
Damn. Yeah.
Yeah, because once you buy it, that's when it'll show up.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, right. Yeah, oh, there it was. It was
a perfect example. I've got two copies of Astonishing Wolfman by Kirkman of Volume 1. And I know I bought Volume 2, and I cannot find it anywhere. So I have no – I mean, that I've looked it up on DCBS's site, and it says right there, Volume 2. So it makes me wonder if they shipped it to me, and I just never realized it until, you know, like months later when it was too late to do anything about it. But anyway. So
alrighty.
Number 4, next up.
All right, my fourth choice is it's a book that came out this – I think it debuted in San Diego but I bought it at Fan Expo. It is called One Soul, and it's by Ray Fox. No relation. And, yeah, he's a Toronto writer, illustrator, and it's a really cool book. I heard about it at C2E2 last year and heard him speak about it, and that made me want to pick it up. It's great. It's told, if you like the 9-panel grid, this is the book for you, because it is told completely in 9-panel grids. The whole story is kind of a double page spread, so you get 18 panels per page, well, per double page, and each panel is telling the story of one particular character. So you follow 18 different characters over the course of their lives, and none of the character storylines really intermingle or anything. So you're reading like really 18 different stories told one panel at a time, and in some cases those panels, like each panel is kind of, it might be a minute or two later, it might be a couple of years later, but you're following sort of sequentially each person's life, and as their life comes to an end, they get a black panel at that point in the book. So like the top right corner is always the caveman story, and the bottom right corner is always the punk girl story. And you just kind of follow these 18 different characters throughout their lives. It's really cool. And he plays with pattern and with all kinds of pattern. Like there's word patterns and illustrative patterns. Some pages you'll open up and you don't really notice the pattern until you kind of hold the book away and you look at the page kind of spread out, and the way he's played with curves and lights and darks and stuff, you see a bigger picture kind of across the 18 panels, and then you still get each little panel on its own, and other times there's sort of like a word pattern that kind of follows through. It's a really cool book. Like it's a book you can come back to and read again and again. Like you can read each panel kind of like from left to right down the page, or you could go read the top corner panel all the way through and then come back and read the next panel all the way through. Like it's up to you how you choose to read it. It's kind of neat. He said, and it's kind of a tough book to read because he's written it sort of in a, it's kind of like poetry, like short, blank verse poetry or something. Like there's not a lot of punctuation and there's not a lot of, it just gets right to the meat of whatever that little panel is. So it's very sort of concise and sort of poetic, and it's sometimes a little tough to kind of figure out what the story is. But if you stick with it, it tells a really neat tale. It's cool.
What was the name of it again?
It's called One Soul.
I am looking at this on Amazon. They've got some of the pages pulling here. This guy clearly listens when Scott McCloud talks. That's the point of what Scott McCloud says in Understanding Comics is there are no restrictions on how to tell a story in comic books. Your restriction is all the restrictions are false. You can do whatever you want on the page. And this guy clearly said, okay, I want to tell 9 stories. I could do 9 back-to-back stories, or I could do 9 stories and just make it so each instance is fits into this certain panel size, and bam, here's 9 panels, 9 panels, 9 panels, 9 panels. That's amazing.
Yeah, it took him, I think when I was listening to him, he said he like planned the story out over 3 years, and like it took him that long to kind of figure out how it was gonna all come together and stuff. But it's really cool. Like you look at some of the people on the back that have given little blurbs to it, and you've got J.H. Williams saying it's magnificent, and you've got Jeff Lemire, and like it's cool. It's cool to look at, and it's certainly something I'm going to come back and reread again and again to just kind of get a little bit more out of it each time. Yeah, it's. Wow.
So do any of the lives like end before the end of the book, or do they?
Oh, yeah. There's one, like there's the first person ends up passing away about maybe 50 pages in, and it's a, how many pages, 170 maybe, so.
So is that panel black the rest of the book?
It's black for most of it, and now as more characters die off, some of those black panels he uses, there's a little bit of script in them, and the whole book is kind of a treatise on what's life and who's in charge of life and that sort of thing. So it's almost like the dead characters get a chance to speak after they're dead for a little bit.
So he doesn't cheat, though, and say, okay, well, I've got a free panel. I'm going to start someone else's life up.
No. Each person's story is restricted to that panel, and that's the only panel to get. The only time that he breaks with that is towards the very, very end of the book, and that's but, yeah, for the most part, it is one person gets one panel, and that's where their story plays out.
That sounds really interesting.
It's cool. Like, he takes the 18 characters, he spreads them out across 18 different eras, and he wanted to get, like, different countries and different belief systems and different, races and stuff. So you get all these different points of view throughout the book. Yeah, it's neat. It is well worth it. Huh. I'm sure it'll be coming out in paperback soon if you don't feel like shelling out for the hardcover.
That's not too bad for a hardcover, really. Amazon's got it for $16.49.
Yeah, no, that's great.
This would never play in digital. This is strictly an imprint.
Oh yeah. I can just from your description of it, his description of it, I can tell
that. I think it would lose a lot in digital.
Or just being able to jump around the way you can with a book. I mean, where you can,
mm-hmm.
if you say, okay, I've read this particular panel, the last 16 pages, I want to go back and read panel 5 now or something like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. I would read through and then I'd be like, okay, I've forgotten who this character is. And I'd flip back and I'd read just their panel a couple of times just to get a sense of who they are and what's going on in their story. And then, yeah, it's cool.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Very cool. It is. Wow. Okay, fine. I feel so shallow with my next.
Yeah,
book.
I know. I was thinking, man.
That's okay. I started with Archie and then.
Maybe I'll move my number 3 up to number 4 just so I don't sound as shallow coming in after this thing. No, I'll stick with it. I got Frank Miller and Dave Gibbons' Give Me Liberty.
Oh, okay.
See, that's another one I've never read. I think I've seen it.
Oh, you gotta read. This is uh-huh. politics. This is war. This is woman power.
that's that Martha Washington character, isn't it?
It is that Martha Washington stuff.
Yeah, I've never read any of that.
Well, here's an opportunity for you to know that it is this thing has been read to death. I'm still on my first copy of this book, but I probably have read it, 7, 8, maybe 10 times. This character, Martha, is a ghetto kid who the only way for them to get out of the ghetto in this completely bass-ackwards, and by today's standards, actually not so bass-ackwards, future world is to join the military. And so she does, and she excels at it. She excels at being a soldier. She excels at taking orders, but also going beyond the orders. The world is the politics part of it is that everybody in the cabinet, the White House cabinet in the United States, gets killed, and they go searching for the next highest ranking guy, which is some schmuck from the environmental agency, and everybody thinks, ooh, the world is going to be great, but he turns into a big loser as well, and it goes down from there. And it's got a lot of the same themes that Frank Miller put into to Dark Knight with the politics with Reagan and such. It's a very political book. Don't get me started, I guess, on the politics.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It really is. I highly recommend it. It's Dave Gibbons can't beat his art with a stick. Like I said, it sounds a little shallow coming out after that.
No, actually, that's got some thought to it, I think. From what I've heard about it, I mean, it sounds like a deep book to something you'd have to get into. So there's nothing wrong with that.
And it's not for the kids. So far I'm hazarding to guess that other than that Archie thing, there's not going to be a lot of kids stuff in this indie week for mine.
No, none of mine are. That's for sure.
It depends. I got a couple. We'll see. We'll see whether I get to them.
Yeah. Well, this ain't. We got people's brains being transferred out. We got nations being blown up. Spikes being put through people's eyes. Brainwashing. But, you know, if you want to read some good politics stuff from Frank Miller outside of 300 and see some Dave Gibbons beauteous art, this was the first arc that he did. I think it's Dark Horse was the publisher at the time. Mm-hmm. And they've put out one-shots here and there over the years. I don't think they've done anything for a while, and probably won't ever again. But it was worth whatever I paid for it at the time. And
didn't they do something where she was like in her hundreds or just not too long ago and she, you know, passed away or whatever?
Oh, no kidding. Really?
Okay. I think so. Seems like I read something about that.
This is going to be the most expensive podcast I've ever listened to.
I'd have to look it up. But anyway, yeah.
Oh, that's my number four. I'll have to. Now I got to go on Amazon and look at the other stuff that he's done.
Yeah, I was looking. Character. Yeah, there's one here, Life and Times of Martha Washington. That was in 2009. That might be it.
Oh, I didn't know they did anything that recently. Goodness. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Again, this is just going to be incredibly expensive.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Thanks, guys.
Me too. I'm looking at the one you're talking about. It's like $83 on here.
Really?
Yeah, it looks like it hasn't been in stock very much. Eh, it is in stock. Yeah, they got $83 list price, $114. So this must be some kind of fancy hardcover. I'm sure I can find it cheaper. Anyway, yeah, I'm just
the copy I got. If someone paid $83 for it, sucker.
I think this is probably a special edition or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, that's cool.
Okay, there you go. That's my number four.
Yeah, this one's probably going to be expensive for you too, but not as bad. My number three would put, pardon me, would be Powers.
Number four.
Oh wait, four. Excuse me, number four. I was looking at three. Number four would be Powers.
Ooh.
Now this is the I actually. Got it started on it on Newsarama did for a while where they were showing like a page a day of certain indie comics, and this was one of them, and Invincible was another one. Oh crap, I just realized it was on the list. But anyway, what are you doing, Murray?
I'm doing nothing.
Okay. Sounds like sandpaper or something. Anyway, so this is the now they got a lot of these in trades, but I went ahead and just since there was a definitive hardcover and it had like two trades for a little bit less than the price of the two trades plus a bunch of extra stuff. So this is the Powers Definitive Hardcover Collection Volume 1. Now the premise of this is, and this is actually being looked at if FX, they're making a series out of it. They're filming the pilot for it right now, as a matter of fact. And this is by Brian Michael Bendis and Mike Oming, which this is under the Marvel's Icon imprint. And if I'm not mistaken, this is what really got Brian Michael Bendis kind of famous. But basically, this is a kind of I guess it really is a noirish. But it's about this policeman who's part of the Powers division of a police department, and he gets he gets a new partner, a female partner. But you know, there's superheroes in this universe, and his job is to anything has to do with superpower related crime, that's what he gets assigned. And so it's an interesting, it's really, you know, it's definitely not for kids. There's a lot of swearing and whatever, but it's just a different look at the superhero genre, and it's done so well. I mean, I only read online like maybe 5 or 6 pages before I got hooked on it, and then when it decided to get the hardcovers. And they've put out 3 hardcovers. I think 4th actually just came out, but I've got the first 3 hardcovers, and it's just, you just can't put it down once you get it. It's so well thought out, and it's just such a different take, and I think that's what I really liked about it. It was just a different take on things. And it's one of those things like Walking Dead where you start reading it and it's like you might get an inkling what you think is going to happen and you're wrong. And you just never know what's going to happen. And it's really great stuff. But like I said, if you wanted to try it out slowly and just get like a story arc, this is one of those books that they keep in print all the time. I think the first one storyline is The Death of Retro Girl, and you can get that trade on Amazon. Yeah, no, excuse me, Who Killed Retro Girl? But I just love this book. And every time I get one, it's just like I just read through the whole thing. Just can't stop. It's really powerful stuff. If you like the procedural kind of cop drama, it's that plus the superhero stuff all thrown in. And yeah, it's really good stuff.
I remember I actually had that first trade at one point, the Who Killed Retro Girl one, and I was really impressed. But it was it came at a point in my comic reading career where I had to cut way, way back on the amount of comics I bought. So there was no way it was going to make the cut.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a dig at it. It's just
yeah.
I couldn't buy everything I wanted to buy.
Well, yeah,
and I never came back to it. Shame on me.
Yeah, what's cool about this hardcover is it's got a bunch of sketches and stuff, but it reprints the letters column as well, and it's also got some scripts. And there's this whole series of letters that this guy, he's a stalker, basically, of Brian Michael Bendis. And it's just weird.
But God, I mean, Powers was famous. I don't know if they still do it in the current printings, but famous for the letters pages.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's some weird stuff in there. I don't remember what was in the back of the other 2 hardcovers, but I mean, every read through there, and I'm like, I just totally taken aback by how great he is, a writer he is. I've never been able to get into his Marvel stuff, but this is great stuff. And when they started doing a regular series just not too long ago, I started getting it monthly, but then I realized, well, I'm going to ruin the rest of the story, so I've got these issues and I've never read them. So I've just been getting them in hardcover ever since.
Well, as aspiring scriptwriters that we are, mm-hmm. We should pick up his first book, which is called Fortune and Glory. Mm-hmm. I always meant to, and actually now I'm reminded now that I need to get a copy, which is about his breaking in, trying to be a screenwriter.
Right.
And what he went through is his trials and tribs. So he impresses.
Is that a prose book, or did he
– I've both. Heard
him talk about it, but –
It was both. It was originally prose, and then he adapted it as a graphic novel.
Interesting. Okay. I'll have to check that out.
I'd actually want to check out the graphic novel, just sort of in the same way as reading any of the other autobiographical graphic novels. See what I think he even draws it. So, yeah, he sure does.
That'd be interesting. Cool. What was the name of it again?
Fortune and Glory.
Fortune and Glory. I'll have to check that out.
B.M. Bendis.
Alrighty.
Letters pages. I love those. I actually remember when I, again, still buy the individual issues, and there'd be like 4 or 5 pages of letters, and he responded to them all.
There were some great letter pages. John Byrne X-Men had excellent letter pages. Oh, yeah. They were good.
That's one thing that DC abandoned. They had just started up the letters pages in the pre-reboot, and so far I'm not seeing any, except for Vertigo.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we'll see them come back in a month or two once they've had time for people to respond and stuff.
Well, I probably have to have somebody on staff to do it. I don't know. Because they got the way they're doing those schedules, anybody's late, they get cut. So,
well, you know, hire one of those interns that Marvel's looking for.
Yeah, you can always do that. That's
someone got a cricket in their house?
Yeah, I think it might be Murray with his window open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, can't you hear them? They're the little Florida crickets.
Yeah, I can hear them. Florida crickets, what are they doing all the way up there?
See, we're having a little holiday right now.
Oh, okay.
We're hanging out by the beach at the pool.
I see.
I know, it's the life. I'm living the life right now. Hanging out in the lanai on my deck chair.
Oh, man, that is
getting sunburned. Mm-hmm.
Chatting on the podcast about your comics.
Yeah. I know. It's rough.
That's just terrible, man.
I know. I'm sending little pictures of me getting sunburned off to the wintry north and rubbing it in. And
jeez.
Did you invite this guy to join this podcast?
I think it was your idea, but that's okay.
It was my idea.
I agreed, so, you know.
There you go.
All right,
what's up next?
All right, my third choice. There we go. We're moving from the super deep, meaningful stuff to, something else by Oni. I think a lot of my stuff here is from Oni, but this one is Hopeless Savages, written by Jen Van Meter and illustrated by lots of different people. There's been 3 4-issue miniseries, and each miniseries has kind of been illustrated by a different artist. And then each miniseries has been collected into like a little mini trade. And I think just recently they've collected all 3 of those trades into one gigantic monster trade in anticipation of new stuff that's going to be coming out. Well, they said 2011, but maybe they meant 2012. Either way, I'm going to go with the first volume of Hopeless Savages. It's just a fun read. it follows this family of they used to be punk rockers, and now they've moved to the suburbs to just kind of get away from it all. And who are the 2 main characters? We've got Dirk Hopeless and Nikki Savage. They're the 2 punk rockers, and they've moved off to the suburbs, and they've got their 4 kids, and they're off doing their own thing for the most part. Their youngest daughter still lives with them, and it's sort of like a family comedy drama until the parents are kidnapped, and then that first trade kind of follows the 4 kids as they travel around the globe to get their rock star parents back from the kidnappers, and it's full of fun. It's
interesting.
Oh, it's lots of fun.
What unfortunate names they gave their children. I'm reading the review of this. Zero, Rat, Twitch, and Arsenal.
Yeah.
Yikes. So are the stories all equal length, and he got artists, or she, I don't even know what this writer.
They're Jan, all Jen Van Meter's the writer, and then the artists the first miniseries tends to be one main artist, Christine Norrie, and then China Clugston does some of the not backups, but flashbacks. Each of the books kind of has little flashback moments, so they have a second artist do the flashbacks, and then a main artist kind of handles the main story there. And yeah, it is fun.
Sorry, but again, are each of the stories like, you know, there's a 10-page story and every one of them is 10 pages, or is it like some of those other ones where it's 2 pages, 7 pages, 20 pages? There's no set story length.
I think the first trade is like the first 4 issues, and I think the first 4 issues are standard I don't know, whatever was standard at that time, 22, 23 pages. Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I think that's how it goes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Pretty, I mean, it's a pretty traditional get to the climax, cliffhanger, next issue, same sort of thing until it all wraps up. Lots of fun.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
It does. Again, you guys are killing me here.
Yeah. All right, what do you got, Caleb?
All right, I have got the first volume of Mouse, A Survivor's Tale, Art Spiegelman.
I've wanted to read that for a while.
Wow.
I've heard about it for years,
but I just never read it.
I was going to get my daughter to read it, and then I reread it and realized she's not ready to read this yet. This is Art Spiegelman's telling of his dad's internment in Nazi Germany.
Yep.
And he uses rats to represent the Jews in his story, and cats are the Nazis. The art is appears to be on the surface incredibly simplistic, but it's not. It's really detailed for what it is. The story, I don't cry at comics often. It takes a lot, and this brings a tear to your eyes because it's not really it's not superhero stuff. This is a true story told in pictures. Gave a little bit of respectability to the graphic novel, in its time. It's won Pulitzers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And Art Spiegelman, incredibly respected outside the comic book industry, gained a lot of respect. I had the opportunity to hear him talk. My God, it must be almost 20 years ago in Santa Barbara. And he is a down-to-earth guy, but he also realized that these stories need to be told, and he needed to tell it in a unique way so people would acknowledge the story. And this is what he came up with. I'm going to do a graphic novel. I'm going to tell it as a comic book, for goodness sake. And it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Well, something like that I can understand. I mean – It would probably sink in better, I think, maybe. But I can see – that makes sense to me why I'd do it that way.
Oh, it does. I wanted to give it to my daughter, and I realized as I read it, I'm like, no. It's heavy. It's deep. Oop.
Mm-hmm.
The wife. Sorry. I'm going to hang up on my wife now.
Ooh. Ouch.
I know.
Oh, man, that's gutsy.
I told her not to call.
Okay.
That's my number three. I don't know what else to say on it. Yeah.
No, that's good. That's a good one. Okay. My number three would be, of course, this is one of those ones that comes out in several different formats, and this is The Walking Dead by Robert Kirkman.
I was wondering who was going to say that.
Yeah, well, this is probably – now, I've read – it's not my very first indie book, but it's the one that I've kept up with the most, which my – a couple of the other ones in the series, there isn't as much of it as this, I would say. But, yeah, and this is the hardcover. I've been getting them in hardcover versions. I just got Volume 7 the other day. I haven't read it yet, but excellent series. I'm sure anybody that's read any comics probably hasn't even been a comic fan knows about The Walking Dead with the TV show, novels now, board game I saw yesterday. I just think, yes, there's a board game. I saw it at the store. We went getting a card for a kid's birthday party. I saw it at we were at Barnes & Noble, I think. I saw it there. But yeah, and this is such a great book. I'm not a zombie fan or the horror fan in any stretch of the word, but it's the characters that makes this so good. The TV show is great, but it just barely scratches the surface of what the comic is, in my opinion. In fact, I think the next episode is on here in about an hour or so.
I still haven't watched the first one of the season yet.
Oh, it's actually pretty good, and it starts following the book a little bit more. But they're still not even out of the first hardcover, I think. So, but anyway, yeah, it's just great. The characters, it's one of those, you know, reading as much comics as we have, you know, some things are kind of like, oh, I know what's going to happen next. It's real easy to see. But this, you have no idea what's going to happen to these characters. No one is safe. So, yeah, it's just gripping. And I love it so much. Usually when I get a new hardcover, I go back and I read all the previous hardcovers back to back. I don't know if I'm going to do it this time because that's a lot of hardcovers to go through.
Aren't there like 100 issues out now or something like that?
Let's see. Number 7. No, they're not quite 100, but 100. This one covers Volume 7. Let me look. It's up in the 80s, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, this one.
Marathon.
73 through 84. And I went it because when they had that Walking Dead sale on Comicology, I went ahead and bought everything up to date. So there's 5 more issues after this. So it's up to almost 90. So that's a good bunch of comics.
Yeah, this is another series I've heard so much about and just haven't been able to read. I haven't picked it up. I haven't looked at it. I think I've seen like 10 minutes of the TV show, and the 10 minutes I saw looked like the Waltons. I mean the zombies, but I mean it like it looked.
It just wasn't what I was expecting. There's several different ways to get this. You got the hardcovers, which is a whole year worth of comics, and I'm looking on Amazon, and they want like $19 for it. And at $4 a pop, that's pretty good. And there's trades they put out every 6 months, I think. The hardcovers, you know, once a year. The show, if you've watched the show, the storyline is completely different, so you're not ruining anything if you watch the show and then jump into the book. There's a lot of it similar, but yeah, I just love this book. And it's, like I said, I'm no horror fan by any stretch of the word, but this is just – it's just gripping.
Really, they're the omnibuses too, which collect – I don't know how many issues are in those, but they're
– Yeah, they just came out with the compendium, and I saw that at there too. I think that's like 4 years worth in that first one. It's huge. Yeah, compendium one. $37 for it on Amazon, and it covers 1 through 48.
That's a huge chunk. Wow.
Yeah, it's a big book. It's not as big as the hardcovers. That's why I like the hardcovers. It's oversized. But yeah, the compendium one has 1,088 pages.
Wow.
And I love stories where, you know, it doesn't matter what character it is. They could be the next guy. I mean, that's why the Game of Thrones books and the show is so cool. It's like, that's the lead guy, and oh my God, that's his head on a spike. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to read those too.
Yeah. But The Walking Dead, I know there's a couple characters that are in the show that have not made that were in the book too, but have not made it this far. They've ended up toast at one point or another.
Yep, absolutely.
So, good choice.
Yeah, I love.
I'm sure our library's got it. I'm gonna have to dig it out, grab the first volume or something, and give it a try.
Unless some schmuck walked off with a copy.
Alrighty. Choice number 2 for me. This is where I had to go back and forth and back and forth. In the end, okay, I'm going with a book by Scott Chandler Also by Oni Press, published by Oni Press. This is Northwest Passage, and it originally it came out in three sort of mini trades, mini little trades, but they've all been collected into one thicker book, which is the one I would probably suggest. And it's a great historical adventure, talking about when Canada was being colonized, and it's sort of a battle between the natives and the French and the English, and all they're all kind of battling to take control over Rupert's Land, and they're all kind of looking for that fabled Northwest Passage through the country to get to wherever the Northwest Passage is supposed to take them, China, the other seas, I don't know. Anyway, it's like a great, rollicking, kind of an Indiana Jonesy type adventure, except set in, you know, like the 1700s in Canada, and it's cool. And plus, it's got Scott Chandler, and if you're familiar with his art style at all, it's awesome. It's
spell it.
Chandler, Chantler.
I thought you were going to be a smartass and spell Scott for me, but okay, cool.
That's got two T's.
It does. You're right.
I know. It's yeah, it's cool. His artwork is it's cool. It's almost Darwin Cookie in its style. It's simple on the surface, but it looks great on the page. Like he's made to do like the black and white stuff It's all really round and soft, and he plays with the black and the white, I love his illustration. He's so talented. He's got like these historical adventure novels. He's done a novel about World War II just recently that was amazing. He's got a set of kids set books that are out that are great. He is just an all around amazing writer, illustrator, cartoonist guy. His but if you got to start like, with one.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, start with Northwest Passage and then find the rest of his stuff.
His art looks like Phil Foglio's stuff. I mean,
yeah,
I mean
a little bit. Yeah, for sure.
That's a compliment, by the way.
Yeah,
Wow, this is really cool. Is this true story, or is this just his interpretation of that?
Northwest Passage is pretty much a fiction set in a historical era. One of the other books that he's done, Two Generals, is a little more nonfiction, true to life. It kind of tells the story of, I want to say his grandfather, in the First World War. It's been a while since I pulled it out. That one's a little more personal, a little more true to life, whereas this one is pretty much just a straight up Northwest Passage, is just straight up adventure.
Reading the description here. Okay. It's on my wish list now.
It's a good one, and it's usually Oni Press. They put out their cheap, inexpensive trades. You can pick them up. Super easy.
I like easy.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow yet I've stayed married for... Never mind. All right. Okay, well, I'm going to go outside the box here. I'm sorry, uh-oh. And anybody can disagree with whether this fits or not. But
my
number two choice is Billy and the Boingers Bootleg by Burke Breath. It is a Bloom County collection. Read the hell out of this one, too.
Okay.
Anybody who's ever read Bloom County, come on. Yeah. Do you guys know Bloom County? Please tell me you do.
I do, yes.
Okay. Yes. It was a strip. It was a daily, you know, a newspaper strip, a daily and a Sunday. Main character was Opus the Penguin, or became the main character after some time.
I read that a lot.
And,
I read that when it was out. That's a good one.
It was great. It's political. It's funny. It's sort of a stepchild of Doonesbury in the early styles. He gets obviously a lot more tight with his pencils and stuff as you get into this Billy and the Boingers period. And this was this particular volume has Opus searching for his mom. It has
I remember that. That's
it shit. Has him forming a heavy metal rock band with Bill the Cat playing lead tongue in the rock band. what else is in here? Oh my God! It's got takes on. Oh, this doesn't have the Tammy Faye Baker stuff in it. That's in another another
Lord,
collection.
That stuff was so funny.
Steve Dallas is in here. He plays the band's manager in this.
Yeah, I remember that.
He is the band's manager. This stuff consistently cracks me the hell up.
Yeah.
Every time I pick it up. I almost picked up I almost put a Calvin and Hobbes collection in here in this, and I went to go reach for it. Saw this sitting there. I got I got to put Bloom County in here somehow. It's got to be represented. This was it. This was the one that again. I looked at all my the wear and tear on all the various books, and this is the one that had the most wear and tear. And originally also came with one of those cool little crappy plastic. LPs, you know, the little 45s that they sometimes put into the into books like Mad Magazine used to do.
Right.
And this one had one in there as well. It's it had You Stink But I Heart You as the lead song on it. So anyhow, if you're looking for politics, you're looking for not politics, I would share this with my kid. I actually would. I have got no problem with that. It's fun. It's funny. She's digging. My older's digging Calvin and Hobbes, which is why it was gonna make the list.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna throw this in her. I'm gonna sneak this into the pile so and see if it makes an impact on her.
Yeah.
Good choice. Yeah, that's I remember cool. reading that every Sunday.
That's
Sundays. What did it morph into? I can't remember what the follow up when it was just a Sunday strip.
I don't remember.
Boone County 2. Was it Outland or something?
Outland, yes, that was it. Yeah.
I remember that.
Opus and some little black girl were the main characters. Didn't quite catch the same way as Boone County. The lightning in the bottle was clearly missed on the second take, and I think he jumped the shark a little bit, but that's okay. He's still got some, still got some of his political sense every week because it got a lot more political when he got to that point. But this is not. There's politics. Every volume of this book covers some election period.
I remember that
because it was Bill the Cat and was running for president. He was dead at that point, but he was still running for president.
Yeah, that was good stuff for sure.
All right.
Okay, now my number two would be, and I've talked about this several times on this podcast, would be Breed, the Book of Genesis by Jim Starlin. Now
I'm shocked, Chris.
Shocked. This is the – it was hard to pick which one. Now, the third series has got a lot of exposition and talks about the first two because this – and I have the first trade and this was put out by Malibu, that Beruva line. And this, the trade came out in 1994, and they never printed the second collection in the second series until he's working on Breed 3 right now. And I just got through reading Breed number 5 of – I think it's either 6 or 7 – and I'm telling you, it blew my socks off. Some of his other creator-owned characters decide to show up, and it was pretty good. But this is a story about a guy who's just kind of floated through life, and he come to find out that he is actually a half-demon. His mother was, to put it lightly, taken advantage of by a demon. And it turns out that his demon father was like the head of this particular dimension. And it talks about his story going from when he was conceived in the I think late, yeah, 1949 up until he's an adult and into the 80s, and the stuff that goes on and finds out all the stuff, you know, that's going on and that you never hear about. And it's just a great tale. Shows him in Vietnam it's really good stuff. I must have read this about 10, 15 times at least. And it just dovetails really good into the next collection. And they just got through reprinting it a couple of months ago note him doing the third series. So I highly recommend it if you're any kind of fan of Jim Starlin's work, especially his stuff on Dreadstar, maybe Kid Cosmos, probably not as well known. That's pretty good stuff too. I always try to pick up his stuff when he puts it out, but it's really good. I highly recommend it.
My only exposure to Jim Starlin is obviously the mainstream stuff,
mm-hmm.
especially the more recent stuff that he did with DC.
Yeah.
But I do like his style. It is classic tight line style. He was early with that. I mean, he wasn't aping anyone. He actually was one of the guys who said, this is the style that is going to make it in comics. And he was right. People are still doing it today.
Yeah. I mean, he does the writing and the art he doesn't ink it though, but he does pretty much everything else, and it's just really good stuff. I really enjoyed it, and it's like I think I've said before. This is probably my very first indie book that I ever read that wasn't one of the top two, and Dark Horse wasn't even around back then, I don't think. So, yeah, I really like this book. Highly recommend it.
Excellent. So I will look for it.
That is my number two.
Good choice.
Alrighty, number one. Bringing it full circle. I started with teen drama comedy way back with number five, so I'm bringing it back to teen drama comedy with my number one pick. It is Blue Monday, also put out by Oni Press. I just realized just about everything I picked today was from Oni Press.
Yeah, getting...
They hit me. I must have found them at that certain time, life when everything was whatever. Anyway, Blue Monday by written and illustrated by China Clugston. It is everything that Archie isn't. It follows a collection of teens in the 90s at their California high school, and where Archie is pretty mainstream and pretty clean cut. Blue Monday is not. It is raunchy, and but it's so much fun. It's funny, funny, funny stuff. Like it follows the main character is Blue. Her name is Blue. She's got blue hair. She's just transferred to this high school in California, and she feels like a bit of an outsider. And she finds people that are similar in her outlook, and it's really just her and her girlfriend and these two guys that are just raunchy horn dogs, and they live life in the 90s, and there's like little musical interludes scattered throughout the book. So as China Clugston is working on it, or as she thinks of a song that might fit the mood of the particular scene, she'll just kind of throw the name of the artist and the song in like a little text box. You can kind of think, oh, that's, you know, like it gives you like a playlist as you're reading it. And the first collection follows Blue. She's a big Adam Ant fan, and she wants to get to his concert. So the first four issues are kind of, how is Blue going to get to the concert? And along the way, she kind of falls in love with her substitute teacher, and she tries to figure out how she's going to make him fall in love with her and deal with these two teenage guys that are just, you know, I mean, they're teenage boys, so they're pigs, and her best friend, and it's just hilarious. There's sex jokes, there's swearing, there's malls, there's bad fashion, there's great music. It's so much fun. It's just, it's Again, highly recommended.
The playlist from this is actually that's like a one of those message board topics that comes up, you know, every time a new issue comes out.
Yeah, totally.
What is China's list this issue, yeah. Or this arc?
I know. I spent the fall kind of going through the first few collections, jotting down the songs as they came out, and I was typing them into the laptop, and I was all set to put them on my iTunes until the laptop died and I lost my list, and now I have to go back and start it all over again. The list of music is great. I mean, it's
you could do it on the veranda. You can go out there and sit on the veranda.
Yeah, I could be doing that right now, sitting out there in the in the sun. There's a little lizard scattered by. That's right. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. There's four collections. She's working on the latest. There was supposed to be a miniseries that was coming out a year or two ago, and the first issue came out. And then nothing came out after that because I think she got a job working for DC as like an assistant editor or something, and that took up all her time. But apparently she's back working at it, and rather than four issue miniseries, they're just going to publish it as a little straight to graphic novel collection whenever it's done, and hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later. But there's four collections right now, and I don't even know how many she's got planned in her head, but it's fun. It's teenage fun.
Does time move forward in these? I mean, like, does the first one is Blue, 14 going into freshman year of high school, and she's a senior, or is it just
kind
no
of
no real time?
No, I'm trying to think whether they're looking. They're not old enough to drive yet, so 15-ish, 14, 15. And so far, most of the story has taken place in that 14, 15 years old chunk of time. Now, one of the trades, I think it's the second one, when it was collected, it collected a whole lot of the some of the strips and some of the one shots that had been published at different times throughout the publishing run. So if you read it, book one, book two, book three, book four, things kind of jump around a little bit. I think the correct reading order is book one, book three, then book two, and book four. But I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Anyone with half a brain can kind of figure out and put things together and really, it's not the chronology of the series isn't so much the important stuff as it's the character interactions and the goofy things they get up to I think eventually she's probably going to have them all graduate from high school, but at this point, I think they're still stuck in grade 9 or grade 10 or whatever that pre-driving grade is for you Californians. Whatever that is.
No idea.
As United Staters, she's 16 years old down here. You know that if you weren't pelting it. Never mind. Sorry.
All right, Caleb.
All right. This was tough. Getting down to my number one was tough. I'm sitting here staring at four different books at the moment, and I'm like, I'm still torn. But I'm going to go with Stig's Inferno, Klaus Schoenfeld and Ty Templeton. This is an incredibly off-the-beaten-path book.
Say that again?
Stig's Inferno. It is this guy Klaus Schoenfeld, who unfortunately passed away, and Ty Templeton, who has done a lot of mainstream stuff. And he's Canadian. They decided to retell Dante's Inferno as a comic book, but as a comedy as well. And this is about this poor schmuck named Stig, who unfortunately gets killed by his piano. It's a pretty malicious piano that kills him, actually.
Obviously.
And he ends up and he lives in this house up on a hill. And unfortunately, a lot of other people end up getting killed along with him, and they all end up at the gates of hell. And this is Stig trying to navigate his way through hell, and he doesn't actually really know he's in hell. That's part of the comedy. He's the straight man in this story. Satan is the rube, his foil through most of the story. He's also there's a love interest. There's a police officer. There's a lot of just little visual, sort of like Gru. If anyone like has ever read Gru, there's a lot of little just things in the panel that are little comedy moments going on that aren't part of the main story, but just little touches that Ty Templeton puts in there. Unfortunately, the series was never finished because, like I say, Klaus Schoenfeld died, but you can read a lot of the plot and stuff online. And actually, I think all the issues are now available for free reading online. But this, I think I got this one by accident. I was picking some books up, and I think I don't think I even paid for it. I think it just ended up in my bag by mistake. And it was one of the best mistakes that I've ever been fortunate to have in my life as a reader. Incredibly funny, incredibly good. It was put out by Vortex, of all companies. I don't think they even exist anymore.
Yeah.
But you can get it online. And like I said, if you go to Ty Templeton's site, he's got it for free reading. So that's one of the things we were trying to emphasize in the earlier episodes is digital as an alternative. This is definitely all digital if you want to check it out. And it's free! Free!
Wow. So,
and it's hilarious. It really is. I'm not doing it even close to any justice here. So that's my number one. I'll stick by it. The other ones are sitting there staring me in the face going, you should have picked me as number one, but I'm okay.
pick me.
Well, nothing wrong with free.
No, and that I think that's what actually pushed it. I was looking at it online and saw it's free, and you can't
see it.
Beat free. It's black and white, originally published in black and white. It was part of that boom. It came out during that boom of black and whites, the Cerberus boom period. Which I can't believe we didn't mention any Cerberus. What's wrong with us?
Huh.
Sorry. But maybe Chris will save me on that. Hold on, I didn't give him an opportunity.
That's right.
Or maybe he won't. Save us, Chris.
Hello?
Chris?
I'm back. I hit my mute button by accident. Okay. No, I was just saying, I've only read the first volume of Cerberus, and it'd probably be in the top 10, but not in the top 5.
And not your number 1.
Oh, Cerberus changes a lot from the first volume through to the...
Well, I've got the
two, next and the...
I've got the second and the third one, I just haven't got into them yet.
Yes, you will find it changes quite a bit.
Caleb, I think
it's still very good, but
getting scratchy on us, sir. And that's it. This probably shouldn't be a surprise what my number one is. This is Irredeemable by Mark Waid in the volume one. Mark Waid and Peter Krause. I don't usually go in for the superhero deconstructed stuff, but I picked it up because it was Mark Waid, obviously. And this is another one of those series that you have no idea what's going on. And pretty much the whole premise is, you know, as it says on the back cover, what if the world's greatest hero decided to become the world's greatest villain? And the main character, Plutonian, is obviously a Superman analog. And he just, for various reasons, snaps and goes completely evil. And the first thing he does, he starts killing his, you know, the people he used to work with. And it's just way out there over the top. The 7th volume just came out. I haven't read it yet, but up to 6. And Mark Waid just goes in places that you'd never think he'd go into. And it's just out there. It really is.
Well, he is evil after all. So.
Yes, that was the campaign. And even if it says that in the back here, it's got the page, you know, Mark Waid is evil. This was the series that put him back as my favorite writer, I would have to say. Now, I haven't – the Incorruptible series is kind of a companion to this. I didn't get into it as much. I do have the first trade. I need to get the others because I think here pretty soon they're going to, like, meet, you know, and fight and want all that good stuff. But, yeah, this is something else, and I highly recommend it. Not for the faint of heart by any means.
Now, is it pure superhero fun?
Oh, there is no fun in this book.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, that's probably a bad word for it, but is it just pure superhero?
Yeah, it's superhero stuff, yeah.
Okay.
But it's like I said, you know, the main character, Plutonian, he's pretty much Superman. And, you know, anybody that knows the history of Mark Wade, he's a big Superman fan, and that was probably one of his dreams to write Superman. And he got to that point, but it didn't quite work out. And it's something else. It just really is. This is like his, you know, you've heard of Ryder writing a quote-unquote love letter to so-and-so. Well, this is kind of like his hate letter to superheroes, actually, I would call it. I don't know how else to describe it. Because there's so many twists and turns. It's, like I said, you never know what's going to happen from one minute to the next. If you ever read his Empire series that he did.
Just about to ask. You read my mind. Okay.
Yeah, if you've read Empire, they're more along that line, but even more intense than that. That's what I would put it. Yeah, it's definitely this is very, very dark. Yeah. I think if you looked up dark in the dictionary, this is what you would see.
He does, I mean, you know, for all his flash, mm-hmm. you know, this is, oh, the world is really cool kind of stories that he told over there with the DC mm-hmm. books as well. Though I guess Kingdom Come kind of goes against that, but the Empire is one of his best books.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't say I've read this stuff from the Boom stuff that he's done, but mm-hmm. if it's that dark, sort of very irreverent stuff that he did over there.
I'm definitely that. Definitely that.
Yet another few ducats going to Amazon.
Yep. Yeah, it is definitely. Now they're supposed to be coming out with a irredeemable collected edition. I don't know how many it's supposed to cover, but the first trade is only on cover price $10, and I'm sure if you went now Amazon's got it listed for $10, but I'm sure if you went to in stock trades, you probably get it cheaper than that. I think when I got it when it first came out, I paid like $6 or something like that. So it's not as big as the other trades. I think it's only got like 5 or 6 issues, but it is definitely worth a read. If you like the stuff that he did in Empire, this is definitely a book for you.
There's a used copy on there. It's one of those unfortunate situations where the shipping is as much as the used price.
Yeah, don't you hate that?
I genuinely hate that, yes. Yeah.
Somebody's got a new copy for $5.64, though. But anyway.
It's now on my wish list. Well, I may check with my LCS and see if mm-hmm. he can order me a copy.
Yeah, and it's still ongoing. At one point, well, because it's like $4 a piece when it comes out, so I switched to the trade. I'm not buying it monthly, but it's good stuff. Really is.
Now, where does it – now, is Incorruptible part of that same story, or is it its
yes,
own?
Yes, it is. Okay. It is part of that. Because basically, Incorruptible is just the opposite. Is a bad guy, a really bad guy, that he decides to go good.
Oh, gee. Wow.
And it's a nice twist. He sees the Plutonian character on one of his rampages, and he's like, you know, I've got to do something about this, and it's the story about that.
And this from the guy, by the way, if you don't mind my pulling out some ancient history from our show.
No, go ahead.
This from the guy who railed on the never wanted to see another good guy going bad story.
Well, see, yeah, I see, this is different though because we never saw him good in this.
Okay. Okay.
Because you walk into it and it's been several months.
Okay.
And you see flashbacks of when he was good to show the backstory, but he's bad from the beginning. In this.
Where you hear him pull out that loophole there? You
yeah.
See that?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I did say that, didn't I?
You did. You did. No, it's okay though. I mean, that's the point. Is that even if it's something that you feel like has been played to death in some type of media, if it's done well, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, if this is good, it's good. I mean,
oh yeah.
For goodness sake, how many times did we see the cop go up against the bad guy and got really sick of those movies, and then John McClane comes along and.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, wow, we've got a whole new take on it, and it's a great movie called Die Hard. So,
But yeah, when you get into reading this, you'll just – it's like it's so obviously his take on Superman that it's almost like a big neon sign if you know anything about the old Superman stuff from the Silver Age and everything. And it's just all turned on its ear. There's – he's sick and twisted and, very bad. Very, very bad man.
Bad man.
So,
send him to the woodshed or to the cornfield.
Yeah. But it's kind of what it's like. One of the reasons I like it, it's like almost watching a train wreck. You want to see what what's going to happen next, you know?
And he makes it through. And this guy, this Plutonian guy, he doesn't get his ass handed to him, huh?
Well, I'm not going to tell you that.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
I mean, he's not unstoppable, but what they have to go through to get to that point, and it doesn't mean he's stopped for good either. But, you know, I'm not going to tell you how that all comes about because it's a big shocker. So
now that we're on it, volume 7, we know somehow.
It's like you said, you don't have any idea how it's going to end. Wade is just he's a master, and one of the things about him that I love the most is not only his stories that are intricate, but the characters always seem three-dimensional, and he has a very good talent for that. They seem real when you read them. They're not like variations of the same character. You might see that in some, or, well, perfect example of that would be that first issue of Green Arrow from the New 52. That was not three-dimensional in any way, shape, or form to me. His characters always are that way, in my opinion. So, but anyway.
I remember the first superhero book that I read that was doing that. It was Squadron Supreme, Mark Gruenwald. And where he took the whole superhero thing, and it's clearly the Justice League, but it's not the Justice League. And he said, you know what? These people are incredibly flawed.
Yep.
And they could go bad at any moment. And if they do, just crawl into your desk because that's probably the safest place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, good choice, man.
Yeah, it's a good book. It really is.
Very good. Yeah.
I've been sitting here flipping through it the last – I keep almost like I want to get them all out and read them again.
All right. Well, let me throw out my alternates real quickly.
Yeah, sure.
Here.
Go ahead.
First one is called The Cowboy Wally Show by Kyle Baker.
Okay.
It's incredibly dirty. No, it's not dirty, but it's not a book you share with kids. But it's about a kid show host that goes bad. It's when Kyle Baker was doing a lot of his own graphic novel stuff. But it's the life and times of Cowboy Wally. Mm. It's very funny, incredibly funny stuff. And then the other one is Ben Edlund's The Tick, The Naked City, the first collection of stories that first introduced The Tick to the city. And a lot of those stories were kind of retold in the original Tick cartoon, which I've been watching with my kids and have been loving. And then my third choice was actually a collection of short stories and drawings that were done as collections of the 9/11 stories.
Oh, yeah.
Called Artists Respond. It was a two-volume set.
I think I got that somewhere.
He didn't want to get too heavy, but it's worth It's still, I mean, the money, they're still for sale, and the money still goes to the Red Cross and various, and the United Way and a couple other organizations that are still trying to support the victims, 9/11. I mean, there are victims. It may, you know, New York may be cleaned up, but people are still suffering because of it. Mm-hmm. So that's my pitch for the week. So a couple humor books and not so funny books.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else did I have? I had, oh, Essex County by Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
So close. It's that was one I had resisted picking up for a long, long time. I picked it up this spring, I think, and oh, great, great heart-tugging story there.
Yeah, I think it was the guys from the Legion podcast talking about it that finally made me go ahead and get it. And I got the first volume of it, and then, like, 2 weeks later, I found out they put the whole collected thing. So I didn't even crack open the first one and then bought that after. So, yeah, that's a good that was very good.
Yeah, it was really, really good. What else did I have on my list? Strangers in Paradise.
I thought for certain that was going to be one of your top five.
Oh, it was close.
I really hope it does. I've heard so much about it.
They're good. They're good. I read them, I guess, last year or the year before, one volume right after the other, and it's an amazing amazing story, kind of a again, slice of life, sort of.
Sort of, yes, with superheroes. Oh, wait a minute, no, sorry.
Yeah. But it's a good one by Terry Moore. And then the other one I had was probably Leave It to Chance by James Robinson and Paul Smith. Yes. Yeah.
I've heard of that, too.
Oh, it's a great, great, great series that's probably never, ever going to get finished. But the three volumes that they have are just excellent, excellent stuff.
That is so out of what you normally think of James Robinson. At least for me, it was. Yeah. God, you know, I need to grab this. My daughter would like those.
My daughter loved them.
Yeah, Chance is a great character for her to relate to. Sort of a girl character, too.
A young girl adventurer, and it's so good. Good, 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 good.
Yeah.
Are you saying it's good?
I'm saying it's good.
So good, he had to say it three times.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right, then.
Good choices, man. This is definitely the most expensive week of the year.
Yeah, you definitely told me a lot of stuff I've never heard of, and I need to I got the powers and The Walking Dead is probably more out of the superhero genre than any of it, but listen to Comic Geek Speak and some of the others, at least I'm not just reading just the two. So that's one thing that podcast has done, and the Legion podcast is the other stuff out there, so I'm at least trying it anyway. So but read some really good stuff. Yeah, I like Essex County is a good example. That's probably the furthest from superhero that you can get, I think, but it's definitely good stuff. So all right. Anything else?
Well, now we got to figure out what to talk about next week.
So.
Yeah, I know. No kidding. We'll have to figure that out.
We'll figure that out eventually. Oh, it
can't be that hard.
No.
My God, the Comic Geek Speak guys have been doing it for 1,200 episodes. So.
Yeah, they've been doing it a while. That's for sure. You have to pick an artist or something like that. Or anything. Anybody out there listening out there in internet land? You know, something you think we should cover, and let us know, and we'll take it under advisement and go from there. If you want to hear us do reviews of recent stuff, we could always do that. That'd be quick and easy. Things that we're reading that we'd want other people to talk about or listen to or read or whatever.
How can they let us know that what they want?
That's a good question. Well, you can contact us at podcast at TalesFromTheLogBox.com. We get a lot of traffic on the Facebook page, Facebook.com, I believe. Let me go to it.
They can just Google search it.
Yes. Yes. Tales from the Long Box podcast group. Yeah. That search thing. We're the only one on there with that name. Better be anyway. And then there's always the website itself. You can comment on any episode. There's the never used forums. They're there, but, you know, even I haven't been posting on there lately.
Look, you know, it's sad. The forums, all of a sudden with Facebook setting up all these groups, the forums are,
yeah,
everybody's forums are kind of slowly fading away.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But yeah, that's the main way to do it. iTunes, iTunes comments would be great, and ratings. Anybody that does that might end up with a trade from my large collection that I have would like to share with you. So keep that in mind. I'm sure I have a duplicate of something that I can share. You know, could be anything. Or I just, you know, might send you a gift certificate on Amazon. I don't know. I can't imagine. I can't promise it's going to be very much money, but hey, you know, it's just a little token of appreciation.
And you too could buy a copy of any of these 15 books and plus that we talked about tonight or the last 2 weeks.
Yes. That's right.
Thanks to Chris's largesse.
But yeah, there'll be links to all these on the podcast show notes, the ones that I can find. I think I found all of them anyway. Not as obscure as some of them were in previous episodes, so it should be good. But anyway, that's all I've got.
I got nothing else this week. Nope. This was actually, while it was fun doing the Marvel and DC stuff,
mm-hmm,
this was actually more fun.
Yeah, I think so too, because it's a lot broader category. And, you know, the stuff that was interesting here, with the stuff that you guys listened to, so. Or read, I mean. So, anyway, that's all I got.
All righty. We will catch you all next week.
All right.
Thanks,
talk to you next week.
Good night.
See you later.
Later.